It's haunting and lyrical. The After the Buzzer theme. I might not be lyrical today, but I might be haunting. I'm a little under the weather, so I'm going to fight my way through this. I've got plenty of cough drops alongside and some water and some Kleenex. And, you know, it's Mike Gross and it's Gordy, who seems relatively healthy by my standard. Gordy, welcome.
Thank you.
Why am I welcoming you like you're a guest? We're at your house, for God's sake. For this edition of After the Buzzer, we have a familiar guest, and we're going to talk about the Sixers. And he is Keith Pompey, who covers this ball club for Philadelphia newspapers, The Inquirer, and The Daily News. Welcome, my man, and tell us what's your take on the Kelly Oubre thing from a journalistic standpoint. Was this reported sloppily at the beginning? Let's start with that.
You know what? I don't know if it was reported sloppily at the beginning. I think there was just a lot of confusing.
Yeah.
Confusion.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like, you know, nowadays, you know, at times it's where, you know, people may try to get out as much information, at least amount of information.
Boy, is that a retreat.
As possible.
Yep.
Right?
Sure.
And then what happens, you get caught out there. Like I honestly think that, you know, it was weird. Like, if you think about this whole thing, it's one of those things where we knew he was in an accident, right?
Yep.
But then it was one of those things where he's in a hospital, and then all of a sudden he's home. And then, you know, you really didn't know what really happened to him. And then, you know, people telling you, sources saying he had rib damage, this and that. Then the injury, then I got a copy of the police report. Someone on my job got it and gave it to me. And you see it and you say, okay, broken rib, injured hip, you know, injured leg. So you're like, oh, okay. And then all of a sudden you think everything's good. And then next thing you know, it's like, well, the surveillance cameras didn't pick up Kelly. So I don't know if it was reported sloppily.
Yeah.
I just don't know if there was a lot of transparency, maybe on Kelly's behalf, and, you know, because let's face it, he was the one who was involved in the injury.
Yeah.
And he was telling people. So, yeah, it's a bad look. It's just a bad look.
Now, was for people who don't know about this, he was injured near his home in what was termed a kind of a hit-and-run auto accident. Now, you're saying, Keith, you're saying you saw the police report. Was there any indication of what actually happened, what the actual action was, or is it just Kelly Oubre talking to police? Is that what it was?
In the police report, they basically get their information from him.
Yeah.
But basically what it said is, you know, he was traveling, up a block or down a block, whatever you want to have it, you know. And then all of a sudden there was a car traveling, you know, in the same direction. And as the car got to the corner, the car made a turn, and then that's when the car hit Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, you believe, you know, most of that stuff has to come from, you know, Kelly's statement.
Yeah.
You know, telling the police officer what went wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I don't really feel, to be honest with y'all, like, I don't know enough for me to talk about this. I mean, I can talk about it, mm-hmm. but you got to understand, like, I wasn't there. And
sure.
But also, it's one of these situations where it just seems like, okay, maybe he had the wrong block.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or maybe this. Or like, all I know is whatever he told the police, that the location and the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, people looked, the police officers looked at the surveillance camera. People in the arenas there, in the gym, I mean, not the arenas, excuse me, the people in the businesses nearby, they did not see an accident.
Yeah.
So this
yeah.
is the problem we have right now. So I don't know if it was reported sloppily,
yeah.
so to speak. I just know that people went off of the police report, and maybe, you know, we're coming to find out that, you know, everything he said was cool, but the surveillance camera didn't pick it up, mm-hmm. so that's when the story changed.
And then you have this TMZ video being introduced into the mix where he's coming home with a bike, incidentally, and he's telling his wife that he got hit by a car. So, I mean, clearly something happened, and he's wincing in pain. So you see that it's legit, but but it seems a little bit different than what has come out to date.
Yeah, and again, that's why I said I don't really know how to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because who knows, something else may come out tomorrow. You know what I mean? It just seems like there's a lot going on right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's I don't know, it seems like a major distraction.
Yeah. I'm sorry to put you on the spot with this one, Bam, but let's talk about it.
It's good, but I'm just saying, it's like,
I know.
It's one of those things I just, you know, I wish I had it, but it's just one of those things where, It's like a soap opera, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
As the world turns.
But now Woj is coming out and saying that it could be weeks and not months that he'll be back, that it wasn't, the injuries weren't as serious as believed. And what's your information on that, Keith?
Yeah, they said that to me too, like that it's going to be a couple of weeks, that he's doing better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the thing is, what they never really put a timetable on it.
Right.
What they always said is, they'll be out for, you know, a substantial amount of time. Now, you know what, that can be semantics. You know how it is. Like,
sure.
Okay, substantial amount of time, we think it's going to be months, it's going to be weeks. Now, typically they say for an average person,
mm-hmm.
if you do have a fractured rib, the average person, mm-hmm. It's kind of so that it could take anywhere from, like, you know, 4 to 5 weeks, maybe mm-hmm. 6, to heal.
Right.
But typically when they say for an athlete, you know, they can tend to come back quicker. Now, if he comes back, and if it's not all the way healed, I'm assuming he'll have some padding on there.
Sure.
And he still may. But, you know, it just seems like, and again, it, you know, again, transparency. Mm-hmm. There was never a time, and Gordy, you know, there was a time when you went somewhere, and then they said, okay, this guy is going to be reevaluated. I mean, this guy is going to be out in 2 to 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It was nothing like that. All it said was substantial time
mm-hmm.
away. So, again, I think it was a matter of transparency that would have, you know, been a little, the transparency could have been a little bit better.
Last night, the Celtics beat the Sixers. It was their second straight loss. Embiid and Maxey, for the first time, didn't really go nuts offensively. Gordy and I didn't see the game. We were at work at another game around here. So tell us a little bit about, did the Celtics defend them? Did they do something particularly noteworthy in that way? Or was it just not a real strong night for the Sixers emergent big two?
It wasn't really a strong night for them.
Yeah.
The thing is, this is Embiid. Sixers have played 11 games this season. Embiid has played in all 11.
Yep.
If this was a year ago or any other season, I would say that Embiid would have at least missed at least two of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I would have said that. They look like a team that was gassed to me.
Mm.
They also look like a team that, and gassed because of, if you think about it, this was a tough back-to-back for them just because, you know, they played Indiana in two games. Indiana has the fastest pace in the NBA.
That's
the leading league. And Indiana got physical with them the night before while they were going fast. So you look at it, the Sixers are undermanned right now without Kelly, without Nick Batum. So it was one of those things where this is, it's bad to play Indiana in 2 days, I mean 2 games, and then the following next day after the second game, you got to play the Celtics. While the Celtics were rested.
Mm-hmm.
So they just looked like a team that was gassed. They didn't get any.
Yeah.
I mean, they had 19 points from the bench. Jaden Springer scored 9, which was a pleasant surprise for, you know, Coach Nick Nurse and them. And then Paul Reed had 10. The other guys, like Marcus Morris and them, they didn't provide much of anything.
Yeah.
So when you factor all that in, you know, it's easier to defend Embiid and Maxey, especially when you have a guy like Embiid, you know, who's still not in tip-top shape. So I felt like that was more of a scheduling loss than anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. That's what I felt. It was like, yeah, more of a scheduling loss.
Yeah, a lot of times you look at box scores and think, and then you look at the schedule and then it's sort of an explanation for it. That's true. Overall, though, they've done pretty well, right? I feel like most Sixers fans, I think, feel pretty good about where they are, right?
Yeah. If you look at it right now, at 8-3, they're in second place in the East.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm not a water half full type of guy, you know what I mean? but I'm going to say this. If you would have told me before the season that they would be in second place in the East, I would have smacked you. not even laughed at you, I would have smacked you. Because for all the drama they had, and you know, you look at Tyrese Maxey, and you remember how it was when he was a point guard 2 years ago. It wasn't that he did poorly, but it was a joke of a point guard saying it. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I'm saying that is because he would dribble the ball up the half court, pass it to Tobias Harris, and then he would go off on the side, right? Mm-hmm. Now he's running the offense. You know, Tobias has stepped up. He's played better. Now, again, it's only 11 games. A lot can change, right? Mm-hmm. But when you look at this start, you have to be pleased with it. Now, the next step that would not be extremely long-winded is that the concern, if there is one, is how does Maxey deal with the physicality of the game? Because now teams are getting more aggressive with him.
That's interesting. That. Mm-hmm.
But for to be 8-3 and 11 game and in second place in the East, I think they're a little bit better, playing a whole lot better than what people expect.
I heard you say on Glenn Macnow and Mike Cielsi's pod the other day that you know, we've been fooled before by this team, like a couple of years ago when they were first in the East. You know, that's the perspective to have, especially this early in the season. I wonder if you could just expand on that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and that's why I said, like, is they're ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. I mean, not ahead of schedule, but they're playing better than what everybody expected.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing we got to be careful of is, like, back then when they came, a lot of people anointed them. Like, this is the team. I remember, like, right before the All-Star break, they defeated the Utah Jazz, who had the best record in the West. And everyone was excited, doing this and that. You know, we were talking about this is the best team since 2001, the whole nine. And while they go to the playoffs and they lose to the Atlanta Hawks, in seven games. They were the number one seed in the East.
Yeah.
And they lost to the Atlanta Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now, we got to, like, look at it for what it is. Yes, they look good. No one imagined that they would be here. But we won't know anything until this team gets out of the second round. And this has been something that they have been unable to do. No matter how good they play, this season will be a disappointment if they don't get out of second round. They can win 65 games, 70 games. This season will be a disappointment if they don't get out of the second round.
So probably they need a few more reinforcements. You kind of touched on this about how their depth isn't quite what you probably like from a championship level team. But, you know, we hear the names like Zach LaVine, OG Anunoby, Alex Caruso. Who would you like to see them get, and who do you think they will end up with at the trade deadline this year?
You know, it's weird. Like, that's a great question. The thing about those guys right then and there, you know, like Zach LaVine, like, I would like to see them get OG, right?
That's my feeling, too. Yeah.
You know, but my thing is, then you ask yourself, is Toronto going to want those draft picks? You got to hope. Because the thing about OG is, like, one of those things where, you know, I think as far as, like, Toronto, there's going to be some more offers to come get him.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it would make sense to try to help him trade him and all this and that. But also, I think there's going to be some other teams that are contending that's going to want him. But to me, him or Bogdan Bogdanović, they are the guys that I like. because one is a shooter who can help create space. He can provide scoring off the bench, or he can provide scoring in a starting lineup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's going to be a time that Kelly Oubre comes back, so you can. That's another punch you can add with Nick Batum possibly coming. You know, those two coming off the bench. But then you look at OG as well. He fits in perfectly there too, because he's not a guy who's going to come in and demand the ball,
right,
demand to do a lot of things, and he could be like a glue guy for you.
I think so too. Yeah, absolutely.
So that's what I like with him. Mm-hmm. Zach LaVine, I feel like, you know, if Maxey continues to ascend, then we got a problem. We only have one ball.
Yeah.
For three players, I don't like that.
Mm-hmm. Keith, Nick Nurse has a great reputation as a defensive coach. And I heard him say the other night after one of the games that we don't even have half of our stuff in defensively as far as coverages, et cetera. What are they doing defensively that's a little different? And do you feel like they're on the way to becoming really elite defensively?
I mean, I think they have the possibility to. When you look at it, you look at Nick Batum, known as a defensive player, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You look at Robert Covington. I mean, he's one of the top guys in the NBA in steals. I believe he's ranked eighth. He's tied for eighth in steals right now, right?
Okay.
So that's another guy. Patrick Beverley, you know, he's known for getting in your face, being gritty.
Yeah.
You know, Tobias is an improved player. Joel Embiid is one of the league top players and blocks, right? And then, you know, De'Anthony Melton, that's been his bread and butter, mm-hmm. right, on the defensive end.
Mm.
But the thing that they're doing different is I think it's like execution. I think that it's aggressiveness. I think they're swarming. I think they got a lot of getting hands on the ball.
Yeah.
You know, on defense, a lot of times it's want to, but they have players who want to. Guys who want to make a splash on that end. But so I think that's basically what it is mm-hmm. right now. And then also what it is they're telling Joel that, hey, we need you to be that elite rim protector.
Yeah.
And he's doing that. He's averaging 1.7 blocks a game right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he can you can determine how aggressively you play the ball based on having that guy, obviously, at the back end. Yeah, so I like Nurse. What's Nurse like to deal with? He seems pretty good.
You know, he seems good. I mean, he's, you know what I mean? It's one of those things. We all know how it is. There's always a honeymoon period. no one, you know, everything is going well right now.
Right.
I mean, you know, it's one of those things where if they go on like a 12-game losing streak, then we'll find out how good it is to deal with them. Mm. But I will say that, you know, the thing about coaches, I don't always expect them to tell you the truth, you know,
that's right.
Like, you know, the coach speak and all that, but sometimes it's a way that they address it.
Right.
You know, some people get gruff with it. Mm-hmm. Some people say it to a way where it's like, okay, I can take it. I got your message, but it's cool, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's that guy. But in regards to like, if you show up in practice, I mean, if you show up in game and say, who are you starting? He'll tell you. He's not one of those coaches like, well, you're going to wait until 30 minutes before you know what I mean? Or, you know, he's not one of those coaches who he'll answer a question. He's not one of those coaches that, like, you know, always feel like you're questioning them with stuff.
Mm.
So, you know, I like him. I like dealing with him. I think he's a, you know, he's a good coach. I mean, he's a great coach.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I feel like he's more open than, you know, than the last coach.
And the beat guy always has, I mean, maybe running is too strong a word, but the beat guy and the coach are always going to have some issue at some point in the season. That's just the nature of the beast. I mean, what was the biggest issue you had with Doc or Brett along the way?
You know, I mean, Doc was cool. The thing about Doc is I like Doc.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the person. The problem is, I felt like Doc just didn't get the Philadelphia media.
Yeah, that's like fair. Doc, that's fair.
You know what I mean? I felt like Doc thought that he could say something and just because he said it, it will vanish. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, okay, prime example, the whole Ben Simmons thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when that stuff came out, it was kind of like, nah, he's done. You know, you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. All of a sudden, it's like, well, he's getting benched in the last 4 minutes of game.
Right.
Well, this and that. And then towards the end, he kind of threw Ben under the bus, you know?
Mm. Yes,
so
he did.
I just felt like, you know, I felt like Doc just didn't get it, and I get it. You have to protect your player, but I think Doc became dismissive when certain people asked questions.
Oh,
interesting.
And then, you know, it came out, and he threw the guy under the bus at the end.
Well, he threw Harden under the bus the other week, too. There's a pattern here.
Yeah. Well, Harden's a big target. I mean, that's, you know, I was listening to Simmons' podcast the other day with Doc, and he was talking about how Joel is not a natural leader and certainly not a verbal leader, and that he may be developing into one. Tell us a little bit about what you've observed of him interacting with the other guys and sort of recognizing the need to be a leader.
You know, it's kind of like, Joel is, I don't know if describing him as an introvert is accurate.
Yeah.
But I will say that he is more of a guy who can, I'm not going to call him a loner. Let's say an introvert might be the best way to describe, right? I know it's all the same, right? It's all the same. Well, right? It's the way people fit it a little bit. Well, yes and no, right? Little bit. I don't think that, see, Joel's the type of guy who, he goes out, he wasn't really a rah-rah guy. He wasn't really a guy who, when the team would go out to eat and this and that, he was going out with them. He was more of a guy who, now she's his wife, but beforehand, he always wanted to spend time with her.
Yeah.
He wanted to be at home. He just wanted to do that.
Mm.
And when the team went on the road, he was the type of guy who, you know, he was on FaceTime with his then fiance and his son.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, guys like that. So what happened is Doc Rivers got him to be more around the team and then be more like of a vocal leader, so to speak. You know what I mean? So, but to me, you know, it's just like, that's just his personality. Like, she's his wife, that's his son. And when he was away, he wanted to communicate with them. Or when he was home, he wanted to be at home with them because of, we all know the schedule. So that was Joel, more or less.
That's interesting.
Do you feel you really, as a beat guy, I mean, in this day and age, just the way guys are, the way the league is, the way access is, do you feel like you know these guys? You know, obviously you travel with them and so on, or are there too many barriers in place to really keep you from knowing these guys?
I mean, I think it's harder to get to know people nowadays. Like, I mean, this is my 11th season. Like, before, it was cool. You know, now, I mean, it was, you know, you would go to P-Tom where they had the practice facility, but the people had to walk by you, so to speak. Like, you would stand there, they would have to walk by you. It was a small court, small gym. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, you go to these big old practice facilities, and where the media comes in is way on the other side.
That's true.
And where the players leave the arena at is on the other side. Like, really, it's hard for you to get to know people.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, you know, if you're a beat guy, the luxury you have is like going on the road. You go on the road and you may be able to be in a locker room, and like the guys have nowhere to hide.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in the locker room and you can chat it up with them. But, you know, if you go to a home locker room, they all know where, like, the game room is, or like the whatever, like the TV room, all types of stuff. So what they do is they hide out. Mm-hmm. So, but I think it's designed that way because the teams don't want you to get to know them.
Mm-hmm.
Now you can still do it, But it's going to take a whole lot more of an effort for you to get to know a player. Mm-hmm. Because the way it's set up is not like how it used to be. Before, you would go there, the players would want to get to know you and ask you things. Now, and you also felt like people there were trying to help facilitate those relationships. Mm-hmm. Because they knew that it would benefit both people. Nowadays, I feel like they don't want to facilitate that relationship, because I feel like, to be honest with you, and I hate to say this, because by not facilitating a relationship benefits the organization.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Because guess what? If the player is upset, the player doesn't have anyone to vent to. If something happens, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, sure, absolutely.
They,
yeah.
They make it seem like the media is the bad guy.
Oh, yeah.
But really, they know by making sure y'all don't have a relationship, it benefits the team.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Maxie, Keith, seems like the nicest guy in the world. And also, going back to this interview with Doc, he was saying that he's one of those guys. It's very rare to have a guy who's that talented and also that much of a just positive energy force. An unbelievably nice guy. Is that what you've seen? It's certainly how it looks to us, but we're not as close as you are.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. I mean, when you look at him, you know, you say to yourself, you know, it's like, I can't, like, if you met somebody that says, hey, I don't get along with Tyrese Maxey, and then it's like, well, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you, yeah.
I mean, like, he's really a nice kid. He really is. I mean, he is. It's funny. This is how he is. He doesn't do it to me, but I should get a little upset because I'm one of the oldest people out there. But he addresses the ladies as Miss such and such, whatever their last their first name is.
God,
like Miss Kate or Miss Lauren or Miss this, that. You know, so that's just the type of guy he is. And you look at it, you know, he's an emerging star in his league.
Yeah.
But he's still like a polite ninth grader. You know what I mean?
That's funny.
He carries himself.
Yeah. God love him.
That's something. Yeah. It's interesting you were talking about a couple years ago when he was trying to be a point guard. It did not go well. And he seems like the other thing that impresses me about him is that he works. It seems like he works on his game. He became not just an acceptable shooter, but an outstanding shooter. And then it seems like to me, maybe this offseason, going into this season, the point guard skills were the next step. And it seems like he's made a lot of progress. It seems like he's made that step, right?
Yeah, the one thing I will say about him is it's all about work ethic.
Yeah.
You know, you look at him, and I used to think, the guy, you would say stuff, and I'm like, come on, bro. Like, and then they say that to somebody else. Like, I want to get 1% better every day. Like,
yeah.
Always say that.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah.
And so you look at it through 4 years, you see the gradual improvement. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I feel like, you know, what he does on the summertime is there's something that he pinpoints that he wants to work on, and that's what he does.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this summer it was like, you know what, if James isn't here, I have to work on becoming a better point guard. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at him, and you know he's playing well. I mean, I have to give him a lot of credit, but yeah. He's always in the gym. I mean, always in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
Always in the gym.
The other week, I mean, after Chauncey Billups said that Maxie is the straw that stirs the drink for the Sixers, I wrote about Tyrese, and I was asking him after the pack, after the game, just about his approach. And Tyrese's quote was, "When I come in happy every single day, I think I do a good job of building Joe up, starting there and then going with the other guys as well." Mm-hmm. I'm guessing you see that. I'm guessing he tries to get, you know, Joe started in one way or another. How would you describe their relationship?
I mean, they have a great relationship. You know, I think that, in my opinion, Maxie might be the best sidekick that he had in regards to, like, a relationship.
Fair.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the thing is, like I said, when you talk about Maxie, And you say if you don't like him, it's something maybe wrong with you. Man. I mean, so when we say he builds him up, yeah, like Joel is not a morning person.
I can relate.
Yeah, Maxie's always bubbly. Yeah. This and that, and he'll God, say stuff and it'll get Joe in a good mood. I mean, that's just his infection personality. I'll put it this way. When James Harden and PJ Tucker were here, they would say that Maxie has to get tougher.
Mm-hmm.
Or he has to get meaner, not tougher.
Mm-hmm.
Meaner. Meaning, like, they said, you would go into games, and he's always smiling and happy.
Yeah,
and he's,
yeah.
like, cool with everyone. And they're like, no, we don't want you to be that way. We want you to, like, hate somebody. Like, you know, do that. That's just how he is. He's a nice guy.
I sort of get that. Nice I sort of get yeah. both approaches. That's interesting. Hey, this is a little off topic here, but the two games against Indiana, Tyrese Haliburton, 58 points, 32 assists, zero turnovers, and it caused me to think about didn't the Kings offer Haliburton for Simmons a couple years back? Do I have that right?
Yeah, you have it right. It's funny. Years later, now people are trying to deny it because it didn't age well, right?
Right.
Because Harden, this and that. But they offered him.
And Daryl wanted Harden and not Tyrese Haliburton, correct?
Yeah, I mean, you know, catch 22 is one of those things where you look at it and say it. But at that particular time, let's face it, Daryl was hired to get James Harden. You know, that was part of the reason why he came here. It looks bad nowadays, right?
It looks really bad.
yes, it does.
It really does. But, it didn't age well. It's just a bad situation.
Yeah, that Tyrese, both Tyreses are going to be great, but man, Haliburton would look really good alongside the other Tyrese.
We should also point out, I think this is accurate. I watched some of that game that Haliburton guarded Maxie quite a bit in the game when he had 50. Mm-hmm.
But at any rate.
Although he's a good defender.
Yes.
So he's a very good defender. Yes. So that tells you something more about Maxie probably than about him. Yeah.
I would think so.
Yeah. All right, so what's the upside? What's the ceiling for this gang, Keith?
I don't know, man. I think the ceiling is, and you know, wherever Tyrese Maxey takes them, they can go. Now I don't know if they can win the championship, right? I don't know that. But you know, beforehand, I was saying the ceiling was another second round exit. But then they looked good. They played well. But the thing is, I think we got to wait and see how good could Tyrese Maxey become. We also, the one thing is, you never know with this team because Joel Embiid has never had a postseason where he wasn't injured.
Yeah. That's fair, too.
Zero. Mm-hmm. Zero, right?
Yeah.
So then, so you got that factor. I also think that they still do have to make another move and get someone in here. Like maybe more bodies. Another ball handler or, you know, another maybe 3-and-D or a shooter, just a bona fide shooter to come in and sharp shooter. So, but like, you know, right now they look good, but if we want to be honest with ourselves, they played three teams who have winning records.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to the Milwaukee Bucks, and then the other two teams they played were the Boston Celtics and the Indiana Pacers, and they split with those five.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what I mean? So, like, I think that, you know, if you don't do a deep dive and you look at it and you're saying, yes, this team is going to go far, but then when you break it all down, right, and you say, they split with those teams, and for the most part, they were playing, you know, teams that had guys who were injured and got off to a slow start, or just teams that just weren't that good that they got victories against.
So
I think it's to be determined when you do a really good, you know, deep dive on it.
Some hard-headed realism from Keith. Yeah, you're right. Though. You're right. That's I didn't think about that. They're winning records. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm sure it drives you nuts when you see people waving the pom-poms and expecting media people to wave the pom-poms about whatever team they're covering to. I'm sure that drives you as crazy as it drives me. Correct, Keith?
It does. Because you know what? When you tell them, like, if I would not say that, right? And I broke it down, you asked me a question. And I was honest, and I gave you my opinion.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, Tom Perry, you're a hater. You know what the biggest thing is? And I don't mean to, like just keeping you guys, like, from doing what you guys do. But this is funny. Like, so when we found out, me, your co-workers and all that, and did the story on how, like, there was no surveillance cameras, like, so I was getting emails from fans saying, you're a hater. This is clickbait. This is clickbait.
Of course. Like, that's the big thing, yeah.
I'm like, E, the surveillance camera said there's no video of him. Mm. Like, it's not clickbait, but what it is people just don't want you to be truthful to them.
Yeah,
you
know, that's right.
They don't want to hear the news, so that's what it is. It's funny.
Yeah. Well, as long as you can, it doesn't drive you nuts, Keith. I mean,
yeah, that's good. That's good. That's done. All right. Hey, man, we appreciate
it. Thank you so much, Keith.
Love talking Sixers.
Yes.
And love spending some time with you. So have fun. Keep grinding.
Yeah. Hope to see you next week, Keith.
Thanks for having me.
All right. All right. Be well. Take care.
See you, Keith.
Bye. Keith Pompey. He is the man. He is.
God love him.
He's got a hard job because it's like constant. It's like, and you know, especially in this day and age, you got to be on top of everything. And you know, they're the paper of record,
yeah.
Right? You know, paper now being in quotes.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
The news outlet of record for anything Sixers, or you know, for other people, Eagles.
I like. I just like his attitude.
Oh, yeah.
He just lays it out there. You know,
he's a good dude.
I love Keith a lot.
I really do. And
just I don't know him except for the pod, but yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those guys that I look forward to seeing when I go down there for games, which I've done a couple times and hope to do several more this season.
Sure.
So, yeah, he's definitely one of those guys you enjoy seeing because he's got that old school mentality. It's like, you know, don't give me this BS, thing. Like, let's talk straight.
Yeah. And, so, you know, that's right about Indiana's pretty decent and they split with him. The Celtics, we know, are good and they split with him.
Mm-hmm.
I sort of throw Milwaukee out because that was on the road in the first game of the season. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everybody was feeling themselves out a little bit. Although it's interesting that Milwaukee remade themselves a little bit in the offseason. Now they have a defensive problem.
They do.
They really have a defensive problem.
Yeah, cause
it's not that surprising if you think about the moves they made, but that might be an issue.
Yeah, swap out Drew Holiday for Damian Lillard, and you're going to have
problems. That's right.
Because Drew is as good as it gets on the defensive end, and Damian is a great, great scorer, a Hall of Fame player, but he's not a defensive player at all.
Yeah.
So, but back to the Sixers for a second. I think the key takeaway here is they do need more bodies. They need guys that can guard, that can shoot. They need another ball handler. So I think Daryl Morey, he's always been known as being an aggressive guy. So I think that we're going to see him address those at the trade deadline and the buyout market. I think that the team they have now is not the team they're going to have in April.
Right.
I think we could say,
and that's probably true of a lot of other teams in the league, of course. I had not heard the Caruso name until the last couple days.
I think it's a good one.
Well, yeah, I do too. I do too, especially on that defensive guard to help Maxey a little bit. Why is his name coming up? Is he a free agent or is he?
No, because the Bulls are 4-7 right now, and I think the expectation is that the Bulls are just going to tear it apart.
Fire sailing it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's a good name because I don't think they're going to have enough to get Ananobi, and I really like him. I think he would be a perfect fit for their
team. Well, he probably would be the best fit.
Yes.
Yeah.
But Caruso would be helping, and Keith also mentioned Bojan Bogdanović. He's with the Pistons, another kind of going nowhere team, and he can really shoot it. He's kind of streaky, but that's okay. You still have to account for him if you're a defensive
Yeah, you definitely have to account for him. I don't love that quite as much.
But, I mean, he'd be a good fit. He'd give you good minutes, I think. I think he's better because right now their bench is not scoring much at all.
And, you know, if Batum and Covington, if they're healthy and kind of – I mean, because those guys are getting old. They've really been around. Mm-hmm. If they can – I mean, they're guys that can guard – the old guard multiple positions thing. Yeah. They've got a little bit of that, and they can score a little bit. They can shoot a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that they did okay in that trade. And, of course, look at what the Clippers have done since they got James.
Which is kind of amusing. Yeah, I think their team with Oubre, with Batum, with Covington.
Yeah, that's another thing.
Then you have three, like six, seven guys that you can throw at the Jason Tatums and the Jaylen Browns of the world. I think there's a lot to be said
there,
for that.
There is something there in terms of their depth. It's not like they don't have any depth at all, but they could use another one, doubt.
So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but certainly it's a promising start to their year. I mean, and, you know, until this whole thing with Oubre happened, it was kind of refreshing that, you know, we're just talking about basketball, just about how they're playing great, how they have a positive vibe with Maxi and with Embiid.
I almost regretted throwing the Oubre thing, the police report and all that business at Keith right out of the start. I shouldn't have done that.
But I guess that's kind of the thing you got to talk about.
Yeah, and it is an interesting, because I think he is he could be used in a way that could really help them.
Yeah, and he was playing really well.
Yeah, and he's another one of those guys that's always smiling. It looks like he's having fun.
It's a good role for him because he's basically the fourth best guy on the team. And that's a pretty good place for him to be, I think, because he's a talented guy, but he's not like, you know, an above the fold star. He's one of these guys that, you know, can really help you and really, you know, with, you know, the fourth option.
He can score the basketball.
He can
he's
do that.
He's athletic and he can score.
Yeah. We always love that phraseology.
Yeah.
So the other big, the other big news thing is this week. I'm maybe overstating it, but only a little bit. It's kind of like scapegoat season because Mike Yurcich is fired as the Penn State offensive coordinator. Jimbo Fisher is bought out as the head coach at Texas A&M for $77 million. Not a bet. Now, that's a golden parachute. and thirdly, Ken Dorsey, the Buffalo Bills offensive coordinator, he gets canned the day after they lose a Monday night game as if it's his fault that Josh Allen can't stop throwing it to the other team.
Those three things are all somewhat connected.
That's why I say scapegoat season. It's like, we're going to get rid of these guys so you don't really see the real problem.
The guy that, first of all, James Franklin's buyout is $8 million times the number of years left on the contract. So, and his contract goes to 2031. So it would cost them $64 million to buy him out. Now, he's not going to be fired. That's not my point. But the thing is, Texas A&M, people don't realize, these schools in Texas, they have all the money.
Yep.
And they just have these oil guys who don't care. It's almost like the Saudis. I mean, they're not comparable to the Saudis as human beings. I'm not saying that. But
we hope.
But it's just like money is no object. Get out of here, Jimbo. Here's $70 million.
Go away.
Or whatever it is.
Just once, I'd like to be in a position like that where somebody paid me $77 million.
It could happen, big guy. The pod's really going to have to take off. But
we're going to need a few more sponsors. Oh, actually, we're going to need a sponsor.
Yes.
But at any rate, it's just interesting that those three things happen like within a week of each other.
And the other piece the other connection I want to draw there between those three things is that the Bills' acting OC now is this guy Joe Brady, who is who ran the offense at LSU when they had Burrow and won the national championship, and I was so impressed with him then, and some of the things I read about him, some of the film I watched, and the way he thinks about the passing game and talking about the quarterback, his field of vision should be from like 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., like the middle of the field. I'm really was intrigued by him.
Right.
And after LSU, he was like the hottest guy in the country, and he was in his 20s. I mean, he's not even very old now. Went to the Carolina Panthers with Rhule.
Okay.
And was the OC there, and that didn't fly. He has been the quarterback's coach at Buffalo. So if they had not fired their coordinator the other day, you know, you would maybe think he's a possibility for Penn State because he's a position coach in the NFL. If they're going to make him the coordinator at Buffalo, then he's probably not a candidate for Penn State. Sure. And he has Penn State ties. He was a grad assistant at Penn State.
I think I read that fairly recently.
Anyway.
It's interesting to me, regarding Yurcich, his system worked great at Shippensburg. It worked great at Oklahoma State. Somehow it didn't work here. I don't understand that.
I don't understand that either. And the other couple weeks ago when they made him available, one time this year they made him available during the week, and he said that he thought that the offense is a lot less his and a lot more collaborative here than any other place he's ever been.
Too many cooks.
On the other hand, Franklin said this week that we're now more collaborative than we were a week ago
something doesn't fit. Speaking of stories
not,
that don't.
Yeah, something is not right there with their offense. I mean, if you look at this Michigan game, mm-hmm. their defense played well enough to win that game. Their special teams certainly didn't hurt them, played well enough to win the game. I thought they blocked Michigan well enough mm-hmm. to win that game. To be that dysfunctional and that feeble offensively, given all of that that I just said, I mean, that's just completely unacceptable. Do you remember the play where they were down? You watched the game, right? Mm-hmm. 7-3 in the second quarter. They get the ball. Catron Allen runs for 9 yards. So now they got a second one on like the 35.
And they threw a wide receiver screen.
They threw a wide receiver screen.
Yeah.
Franklin said after the game, that was supposed to be a run, and we looked at what they were showing on defense. And to me, second and one in the middle third of the field, that's take a shot. You always talk about taking a shot and explosive plays. That's the perfect time to take a shot. If the guy's not open, throw it out of bounds, throw it in the stands, and it's third and one.
Right.
You got two plays to make a yard. That to me was, and then I went back and looked at the tape today. I went back and looked at the videotape, and Penn State had a 7-man front. Mm-hmm. They had two tight ends and the 5-man front, and Michigan is in what looked to me like a 4-3. They had them outnumbered up front.
So they should have run.
If they're going to run the ball, yeah, that was a run. They're showing you run. Mm-hmm. And Franklin gets in there and says, we were going to run, but what they showed us, we couldn't run. And then throw it 2 yards behind us to Malik Miega.
Yeah, was he like their fourth receiver?
I think about their sixth receiver when everybody's healthy.
I remember the series, and it was like, I think that's where the grumbling in the stands really gained its footing.
Yeah, that to me was, what is happening? I don't know. They allow the other teams to dictate to them in a sense. I mean, if they could run the ball like that, they should be able to win that game. If they could run block the way they did against Michigan, they should be able to win that game.
So here's the other thing we hit on. You and I both kind of hit on this independently. The whole thing about the wide receiver core, and it's like how it's not been successful against the best opponents, even though they recruit top-level kids. Is that a recruiting problem? Is it a player development problem? And you also mentioned, is it a scheme problem?
Yeah.
You know, are they just not scheming up? Because that's sort of what Franklin's hit on about, we're not getting easy throws for our quarterbacks.
Yeah, yeah, so. that's the thing. And I just don't know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
They're recruiting. I think that you could blame a little bit on their recruiting mm-hmm. At that position. You know, Caden Saunders, for mm-hmm. example,
mm-hmm.
Who really hasn't done much as a receiver at all, although he had one good play in the Michigan game, is a guy who was a pretty high-level recruit,
mm-hmm.
but you peel back the onion a little bit, well, Ohio State wanted him, but they wanted him as a defensive back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a multi-position guy that, you know, so he might not have been like a super blue chip wide receiver recruit, mm-hmm. you know. There's a little bit of that going on there. They recruiting is a piece of it.
It's an unanswerable question, but it's curious to me that these guys can't get open. They just don't get open against top-level defenses.
They don't. And I think I put it, I would say I maybe blame Aller a teeny bit more than a lot of my colleagues. Mm-hmm. I think there's times when he just has not made the throws, not thrown guys open. I think that's a real thing
Is a real thing.
So I put it a little on him, but not mostly on him. A little bit of scheme, a little bit of just the wide receiver group has not worked out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I can contrast that with Ohio State, which seems to have an NFL-level wide receiver every year, literally every year.
If you look at the playoff, what I think of as the playoff era, since mm-hmm. they've had this committee and this 14 mm-hmm. playoff, Georgia is an exception to this.
Mm-hmm.
But other than Georgia, everybody that's won the national championship or had a 3 or 4 year run where they were one of the best
mm-hmm.
to that's where the position group that stands out the most. Mm-hmm. Think of what Ohio State has had. Think about what Alabama had when they had Devontae Smith and that bunch. Mm-hmm. Clemson had hordes of them. When LSU,
Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase. That ain't bad.
Now, come on, man. I mean, maybe Joe Brady is nothing. And he, with that quarterback and those receivers, I mean.
That ain't bad.
Yeah, get Brady out of here. Forget Brady. Yeah.
Well, the other sidelight to this whole Mike Yurcich firing thing is Audrey Snyder, who's been on our program, works for The Athletic, does a great job covering Penn State. She reported that Beckham Kritza, apologies if I'm not pronouncing that correctly, a quarterback recruit from Colorado, he's going to be in the class of 2025, was going to give his verbal before the game to Franklin in his office adjacent to the locker room. And when he went in there, Yurcich, who was really big in his recruitment, was nowhere to be found. And according to Audrey's story, the quote from Kritza was that Franklin kind of hinted the fact that Yurcich was not going to be part of the mix anymore. And he committed anyway, and he's committed to the program because, you know, it wasn't just Yurcich the reason. So that was interesting.
That is interesting. A couple of things about that. Number one, he is the number one player in the high school class of 2025.
Mm-hmm.
Is a quarterback. And he's from Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of these guys that's been getting offers since he's in eighth grade. You know, he's just a freak. And, mm-hmm. He just narrowed his list down to seven just last week. Mm-hmm. And Penn State was on that list.
Mm-hmm.
Along with Oregon, Michigan, I don't think Ohio State, Alabama, Colorado, Oregon, did I say Oregon? Florida State, I think. Anyway, mm-hmm. So now does Penn State think they don't really have a shot with him? That they're signing another 2025 quarterback? This kid's a three-star. This kid is maybe a Bo Pribula type level recruit. Mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't know. And then the other thing is, Franklin has, for a while now, certainly after the Ohio State game and certainly on Saturday night, he was saying things that he had to know were being perceived as shots at Yurcich.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, yes.
And I don't think you're doing that unless... I don't think you're doing that if Yurcich has a lot of defenders in the Lash building.
That's true.
Right?
Good point.
I think that's because then you're kind of like throwing an assistant under their bus, and what are your other assistants thinking? But I suspect that there was some unanimity within the staff that this guy was on his way out and it's not working,
mm-hmm.
At least, regardless of what you think of him. So.
That's interesting. Now, Audrey also, she was throwing around just names of potential replacements. In the interim, Juwan Sider and Ty Howell are going to be the interim OCs for Penn State. And she mentioned Tim Kramsey, the offensive coordinator of Memphis, Sean Lewis, the offensive coordinator quarterback coach at Colorado, and a guy who actually would have a relationship with this Beckham Kritza, Mike Denbrock, the offensive coordinator at LSU, and Joe Moorhead, the head coach at Akron. How realistic do you think we see a Moorhead sequel?
Well, I guarantee you that they've been on the phone. I mean, I would be, if he's 4-18 in 2 years at Akron. He was rave reviews as the OC at Oregon. He left Penn State to become the head coach at Mississippi State, which I thought was a bad move. I mean, you go to you're like the number five program in the SEC West.
And
I mean, that's like Franklin's problem doubled, you know?
That's true. That's a good point. And
you're never going to out-insane the people who are ahead of you and outspend and out, you know what I mean? He's got to beat, I mean, you got, it's Alabama, Auburn, Texas A&M, and LSU.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to out-insane any of them.
I love that phraseology.
And you got to beat most of them to get where you want to go.
Yes.
Consistently. You know. I thought that was a bad move for Joe, but whatever. And then he went to Oregon and was the OC and was very successful there.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those guys that you'll see. Look at this great, you'll see a YouTube video show up from somebody. Look at this unbelievable play design. You know, he's just one of those guys. And I think some of the people that I read and hear about think that he's an RPO guy and he's got to have a mobile quarterback to be successful. I don't think that's true at all.
Mm-hmm.
He was at Fordham, he had a very pro style guy and a good running back from Central Dauphin East, Chase Edmonds, mm-hmm. who I think played in the NFL.
I believe you're correct.
And he lit it up like crazy with it.
Those numbers when he was coming in. They were pretty amazing.
And he was the head coach, but he was running the show, offense. Yeah. He was calling the plays.
And obviously, he had a really good run the first time through at Penn State. Now, granted, he had McSorley, he had Saquon Barkley, but nonetheless.
But he also had a much worse offensive line than they currently have. I don't know what Franklin's thinking, and I certainly don't know what Joe Moorhead's thinking, but I think he would be ideal. That's sort of the obvious choice that everybody's going to, sort of gut reaction. Mm-hmm. But I think it would be a very good choice. I think with Franklin is a CEO, and he said this last night. Mm-hmm. He made this spiel about, hey, I'm responsible for it. I take the blame. It's my responsibility. But I want the offensive coordinator to be the head coach of the offense. I want the defensive coordinator to be the head coach of the defense. Special teams, all of that. I want them to run their show, and I'll advise, I'll help. So I think you got to have a guy like, I think his coordinators in his system, I don't think it's that unusual. I think a lot of coaches are that way. I think Nick Saban is basically that way.
Yeah.
I think you got to have a guy who's kind of mature and been through it and a big respected sort of personality. Mm-hmm. I think Manny Diaz is a perfect coordinator. Yeah. How long he's going to be there, who knows.
Yeah, that's,
but that's what I kind of think that's what Moorhead is too. A guy who's seasoned, who's been around, who's an adult in the room.
Yeah.
I just think he would be perfect.
I think that's a good fit. It reminds me very much, Moorhead in particular reminds me very much of when Andy Reid had Jim Johnson as his defensive coordinator, like an older guy. Kind of like you said, like the adult in the room. I think they're kind of the same kind of situation. They're given autonomy and they're more
than
equal
to
the task. That would be the comparison I would draw.
Yeah.
The other thing, this is something we were talking last night as we were watching FNM play E-Town. You said you got a number of interesting emails in the wake of this whole thing. I just wonder if you could just talk about that and just what that's been like and just some of the things that people have been saying.
One of the things that I love about covering Penn State is, in more than ever, you cover high schools, your audience is grandma and grandpa and the boyfriend and the girlfriend and the cousin and the buddies of the athletes. And they're not really interested in thinking about it in the kind of depth or seeing the big picture, but I have a lot of readers for Penn State that I correspond with regularly. They email me, I email them back. And that kind of went crazy a little bit this week. And some people that I don't normally hear, I got some things that were like, almost like a notes column. You know, like observation, observation,
That's putting some time in.
Yeah, that's right. That's the thing about it. It's sort of gratifying. These people put some time in. I had some guy who sent me an email. He said, you're much better at this than I am, but here's some questions for you to ask Franklin. And he had like 10 questions and exclamation point question mark.
Give me an example. What were some of the questions?
Well, just like, why are you running the ball up the middle on second? That kind of stuff.
Boy.
And
didn't you say one of your correspondents wanted you to read his letter to
Franklin? Yes,
prior? So I want you to get on that, would you please?
Yeah. A gentleman who said that this guy was totally positive.
Right.
And, we need to be Penn State fans. We need to stick together. James Franklin is a great leader for our community, blah, blah, blah. And he wants me to, at the press conference, read this.
I wish you would get on that.
That is so not happening. But I did send it to James. I texted it to him. I just said, hey, look, this guy wanted me to read this. Obviously, I'm not going to do that, but here it is.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah, I sent it to him, and I haven't heard back.
That's very interesting to me.
So anyway, that's one of my favorite parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a bunch of regular guys who are just...
Yeah.
Most of them are fans. A couple of them are haters. I have one guy who's really hates me, thinks I should have... like in the first half, the Big Ten championship game in the first half, he was saying, I'm a pussy because I don't call for James Franklin to be fired. And, by the way, they ended up winning that game and winning the Big Ten championship.
You didn't hear from him after that, I bet.
Well, yeah, but he's back.
And
he's been back at regular intervals. But he's the only guy that's just, like, so far off. you know, like Alex Jones. But
yeah, that's the stuff that just that's the downside of it. When you hear from people like that who just, you know, have no ability to reason.
Yeah. This guy's like, you know what it's like? It's like, I remember this is a number of years ago now, but I got a thing from readers saying, well, you're a tell it like it is guy. Why don't you talk about this public versus private thing in high school sports? You know, and then boundary versus non-boundary, and they're recruiting, and I, there's probably no sports writer in Pennsylvania that's written more about that than me. Yeah. I mean, so I sent him like 10 stories, just cut and pasted them into the email.
The one I remember most prominently, this was back a few years, was you wrote about when Lancaster Catholic won the state title in boys basketball. You wrote about that very topic.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. But you know what? It's not good enough, because what those kind of people want, they want you to write, well, Lancaster Catholic won today, but they really only... It's really only because they cheat. I mean, that's essentially what they want you to say.
Yeah.
Come on.
Correct. Yes.
Anyway, I'm babbling. Sorry.
No, but that's I think it's a fertile topic, and you know, it, just the perceptions that people have or will cling to no matter what. You'll be interested in this. There's a guy I work at the courthouse now. There's a judge there who actually went to Penn State, and I think he served as a ball boy like way back when. And he's a very nice guy. His name is David Workman. He's convinced you're an Ohio State fan.
I'm an Ohio State fan.
Yes, he's convinced. And I said, well, you should just come on the podcast and talk to Mike about this.
Yeah, that would be great. I would welcome that.
He's actually a really nice guy. Yeah, I really love him. But he's convinced you're an Ohio State fan.
That would be good. I wonder if he knows our boy Dave is an Ohio State graduate.
No, any questions? He said that you grade them too hard.
I grade Penn State too hard. Correct. Well, he's not the only person who says that. And I don't know. Maybe sometimes I do. That it's interesting. That report card gets a lot of reaction.
Yeah,
and I do it really. That's the first thing I do.
I said that to my wife. I said, you probably did that in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, it doesn't take long because I'm trying to get it out of the way. But I do put some thought into it, though. I do really try to. I'm usually thinking about that during the second half of the game quite a bit, but...
I mean, because it can be hard to come up with five ups and five downs and all
the stuff. Oh, the market report. That's a different thing. Well, that one I play around with. That one is fun because that almost reminds me of what I imagine script writing to be like.
Uh-huh.
Or like being on Letterman's writing staff or something like that. It almost reminds me of that.
Yeah,
that's really a kind of a fun departure.
I do like that. I think it's great. That's where, you know, you this week in particular, it struck me where you mentioned the whole thing about the wide receivers, because I think I'd mentioned that on Twitter too, and we were independent of one another. We're kind of looking at the same thing and saying, why is this a problem for a team that recruits as well as they supposedly do?
We thought it was going to be a little bit of a problem this year, and Franklin did too. Clearly he did. But not this much of a problem.
It certainly has shown up at the worst possible times. They just can't get open. They just can't get open.
There's just things that are not available to them in the passing game that are sort of basic. And it's really killing them. It's really killed them this year.
Your point about Aller throwing people open, that's probably an experience thing, don't you think? That once he gets a little more confidence, once he understands what he's looking at a little better, I think that will probably come.
You know, that second and one thing we were talking about, I bet a senior, like a fifth-year senior guy, would check off himself maybe. Mm-hmm. Probably. And just get them into a run there. And
take I mean, what's
it
there.
It was
take
seven against four.
Yes.
I invite anybody to go on YouTube and look for that play, because it wasn't that hard to find, and see if I'm lying. It was 7-4, and he's saying, Franklin's coming in and saying after the game, well, what they were showing us, we couldn't run the ball. I don't get it.
So, anything else for the good of the order, Mike?
Oh, I was worried about my voice going up, and now I'm conducting a filibuster. Sorry about that. All right, that's it, gang. Well, thanks a lot to Keith. We always enjoy talking to him.
Yeah, we do.
And I think we're going to take next week off, right?
We are, because for the holiday.
And the traveling and all that.
Certainly we hope somewhere down the road to have our friend Mike Jensen, who recently took the buyout from the Philadelphia Inquirer. In fact, this is his last week. He's been great covering college basketball over the years and just one of the great people in our business.
Yep, yep. And we've had him on one other time. Yeah. But it'll be great to have him on again.
Yeah, because I texted with him fairly recently, like before this week, and he said he can do it, but just not this week. So we hope to have him on. Hopefully soon.
Yeah, we should be able to do it soon. And we're going to get into the hoops more high school and college a little bit in the coming weeks. And
right. And Mike's writing a book. That's his next project. He's going to write a book about Philly hoops. So I'm sure that'll be great and that will be well received. So we'll want to touch base with him about that. So hopefully we'll have him on soon.
We've done it again. Whatever it is, we've done it again. Thanks, Gordy and Mike. We'll see you later.
See you later.